Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the head.
Well, howdy! Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home, presumably, unless you're listening on a mobile or i or smart or Android or whatever device, you would know that because that's where you go to get the link for the stream here, maybe get the podcast and stuff. But anyway, no, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That is also where you will find, yay, verily, and forsooth even, you will find access to the chat room, which I am waiting for this very, very tired, crippled, worn-out old computer to load now. Plus, it's hard. I shouldn't talk badly about it. It has given yeoman service for far more years probably than I have a right to expect it to. Oh, there's the login. Yay! I want to see how many people beat me to the chat room. What do you mean, Bob Kincaid, no sale? Streaming, sending. Well, this is wonderful. No sale. What? I'm sending. It's recording. I see the meters bouncing happily. Okay. Do we have it? Okay. Check, check, 1, 2, mic check. Okay, yeah, so, I'm easily confused. Good evening, chat room. Good evening, News Ninja Carol Baker. Good evening, Devin. Good evening, Doctor Who. Good evening, Jeremy. Good evening, John. Good evening, Lance Rocks. Good evening, Ralphs. Good evening, Sergi. And good evening to longtime veteran, indefatigable chat room moderator, Sparky, in the Northern California climate change flood zone, apparently. Oh, no, not more flood warnings. That's the topic in the chat room this evening. More flood warnings for Northern California. Okay, yay, thank you. Thank you, Carol. Got it. Yay. Because that was just messing with my noggin in a large way. Okay, anyway, back to where we were. Yeah, it's Titanic Tuesday. We've got a good group in the chat room, a group that is growing. Gerald just wandered in. We had a lovely conversation with Gerald last night. Hi, Gerald. Had a great conversation with Sergi, too. Hi, Sergi. And a great conversation with Carol. Hi, Carol. Hi, Barbie. What else? You know that little tab there called Contribute on the Horn main page? Yeah, that's how we keep all of this on the air. Last night we had one order for the Wild Rice Premium. Thank you, Diane in Kansas, Stan. Diane telling me later, if you boil it, I can probably make it. Yeah, you boil it, you steam it, yeah. I think the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas, Stan, was engaging in a little self-deprecatory humor. But at any rate, thank you to Diane for that premium order, because that meant that we fulfilled two-thirds of our fundraising goal for the evening, which, and thank you very much, Gary and Gaia, for helping out overnight, which means that we are in a $30 hole this evening, meaning we need to raise $180 to stay even in a week where we're facing some, well, you know, some pretty grim damn bill pay. So, you know, 18 folks at 10, 10 at 18, 2 at 90, 4 at 45, at 3 at 60. Oh, don't make me go. 6 at 30. However we do that, that's how we keep all of this going. And, you know, here in the middle of December, we got things come and due that, well, they're due. So hopefully, look, it would be great, it would be wonderful if we had a lot of people. I mentioned the premium. Let me explain that again. And for anyone who hasn't heard it, I have access to some wild rice gathered in the pristine, crystal clear waters of northern Wisconsin. Manumen, the food that grows on water that has sustained a people for thousands upon thousands upon thousands of years, hundreds of generations. Don't think you're going to necessarily find that at your local grocery store. No. And so, with the kind permission of the person offering it, I am offering it as a premium. Anybody who wants to kick in $100, we will send you a pound of this magnificent, magnificent food stuff, this heritage food item. And you, in turn, will be helping to keep the lights on here and also adding something perhaps to your holiday table that has never been there before and is nothing short of magnificent. If you want to partake of it, or if you want it sent to someone you care about, then use the PayPal interface and in the notes section, give me the name and the address for where you want it mailed, and away it will go. Okie dokie. If you don't, then, you know, $5, $10, whatever, that's how we stay on the air here. We are by far a lot cheaper than most broadcast outlets. Now, yes, it is, in fact, Titanic Tuesday on the horn. And I've spent the day feeling icky. I don't mean physically ill. I mean just icky because the torture, the heavily redacted executive summary of the 6,000 pages of the Senate torture report came out today. And the first thing that I saw was the New York Times article. Yeah, the New York Times article regarding the torture report was a case study in butt covering, to say the very least. I'm going to make an assumption here. I am going to presume that you are aware of the torture, of the fact that we've been torturing people. I'm going to presume that you know that it was done with the knowledge of the Bush administration, you know, Dim Leader, Count Dicula, kind of sleazy rice, goes great with kind of sleazy chicken. All of those. I'm going to assume that you know that it was a level of brutality that that marks us all with shame. the details in particular, well, some of you may have read through that, through those as well. Some of you may have been gone plodding as I did through the 500-page executive summary and picked up the lowlights. There aren't any high ones. But I thought, I don't know that you necessarily read the New York Times story, and I'm not going to read the New York Times story to you because that's boring. I am, however, going to share with you the opening paragraph of the story as written by Mark Mazzetti of the New York Times, a leader in for-profit media. Dateline Washington. See, you have to use that voice. Dateline Washington. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Forgot about that part. Dateline Washington. A scathing report released by the Senate Intelligence Committee on Tuesday found that the Central Intelligence Agency routinely misled the White House and Congress about the information it obtained from the detention and interrogation of terrorism suspects, and that its methods were more brutal than the CIA acknowledged either to Bush administration officials or to the public. That's when the gag reflex kicked in. I mean, this is journalism, right? That's the lead? The first paragraph you're supposed to really, I mean, I had journalism 101. I had a little in high school. And the idea that you want to really grab the reader's attention and tell them what you're going to expand upon in coming further paragraphs. I mean, for instance, we engaged in... How about Dateline Washington, a report released by the Senate Intelligence Committee... No, Dateline Washington, a heavily redacted report released by the Senate Intelligence Committee on Tuesday, found that the Central Intelligence Agency during the administration of George W. Bush and Dick Cheney engaged in acts of torture shocking to the conscience, horrifying to one's moral ethos, disgusting to civilized people. All of these acts were described by George W. Bush as not being torture. How about that? Okay, I mean, and I'm just winging it. I realize that. But really, really, Mark, what's your name? Mark Mazzetti at the New York Times, really the first thing on your mind, or perhaps that of your editor, was to cover the ass of the Bush administration that repeatedly said, it's not torture, it's enhanced interrogation techniques. Really? I had to learn new words today. Well, not new words. I knew the words. I had to learn new combinations of words. I had to learn new phrases. I had to come to grips with stuff in my mind that really 51-year-olds, 61-year-olds, 101-year-olds, and Methuselah, his own damn self, ought not have to contemplate within a realm of human conduct. I had to learn about rectal feeding. Oh, sure, Bob. Go to the blue stuff right off the bat. I mean, Jesus! Let's see, with the 90s, we had the Republican pornography report of the Star Commission, the Star Chamber. And then the decade of the aughts, we find out that, you know, because, I remember a lot of hand-wringing when Ken Starr released his report on that consensual sexual event of some sort or another between Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky, and the government, the Republicans wasted, what, 70, 90, 109, I don't remember, millions of taxpayer dollars trying to find out about essentially a blowjob. And I remember Flush Flimbaugh, oh, my friends, the flag is falling. Oh, this heathen devil, Bill Clinton. Give me another pill. I love to chew them up for the refreshing burst of flavor. I remember that. And yes, I damned well do remember during the reign of error, which really it's not a reign of error anymore, isn't it? Is it? It's a reign of terror. It was. I mean, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. In that report is contained one little factoid. Not only were these, hey, you know what? We've had the word thug bandied around a lot lately. How about we bandy it around some this time, only we won't use it in regard to young, unarmed black men. Instead, we will use it to refer to silk-suited, bespoke, shiny shoe-wearing agents of the government of we, the people of the United States, who by God ought to be living in a goddamn cell in The Hague by now. Yeah, thugs. CIA thugs. Bush administration thugs. Yeah, it turns out the CIA is such a gang of sadistic torturers. They tortured their own informants. Yeah, they hung up a couple of guys and just let them hang there in torment for a day or so until the light went on and they went, oh, wait, these are the people that were gathering intel for us. Oh, shit, torturing the wrong people. About medical professionals who went in and went, oh, no, and got to the point that they couldn't come up with any medical professionals with low enough ethics to go in and vet their torture. About a man left to hang and freeze to death. About waterboarding carried out so viciously that it induced convulsions and uncontrollable thoracic spasming. There's another fun one. Usually you only read things like uncontrollable thoracic spasming in the course of some sort of medical report text, that kind of thing. You know, he overdosed and it caused uncontrollable thoracic spasming, blah, blah, blah. But no, we did that on purpose. And I'm yelling. I've been yelling for minutes now. But then you get to the rectal feeding, which is something, which is words in combination that used to only appear in packages that were wrapped in plain brown paper and arrived in an anonymous mailbox somewhere. That some old man with a filthy raincoat would keep in his army footlocker, you know, under the bed, back behind the dust bunnies. Until, you know, one of those really special evenings. So I'm going to assume you know about that. I'm going to assume that you are as horrified as am I. Thank you for your understanding, Carol Baker. Yes, you're yelling, but you're yelling for all of us with a scintilla of decency and a soul. See, it's moments like this, though, that make you wonder what the value of a soul is. Because let me cut to the chase. Despite the fact that the United Nations Rapporteur on Human Rights, an Englishman with a long history in international law, has stated unequivocally that the Attorney General of the United States must, you know, it was interesting. He didn't say could, would, should. He said must prosecute the individuals who did this and who were ordered to do this and the people who gave the orders to do this. Must. Despite the fact that the UN Rapporteur on Human Rights has said that one little thing. And this is cutting to the chase. nothing will happen. You remember the other night? I don't remember the context in which we were talking about it. But it was either last night or late last week. I said something along the lines of, if you are tinkering with a broken thing, you wind up at the end of your tinkering with a broken thing that's been tinkered with some. This is that. The Central Intelligence Agency is not an agency of the United States government. Well, we could probably stop right there. It is a rogue force that operates on a black secret budget, whose activities, even with, I mean, this is the stuff they didn't redact the rectal feeding. By the way, I did look it up. And apparently it is a cockamamie medical theory from the turn of the 19th into the 20th century, in which, before the invention of, say, an NG tube, a nasogastric tube, or a directly injected tube into the stomach, or a feeding tube through the skin into the digestive tract, as Lauren pointed out in one comment on my Facebook page, almost all digestion takes place in the stomach and the small and or the small intestine. It does not happen, and this is probably human anatomy that nobody necessarily needs, but it does not happen in the colon. The colon is the waste disposal end of the human alimentary canal. Yeah, Devin, I know what you mean. Devin noting, days like this are good for auto lobotomy with a railroad spike. Whew. Takes all the fun out of getting into the fruit jar with the swirly straw, I can tell you that much. But little or no digestion takes place in the large intestine, which is where one is putting whatever it is one is using for rectal feeding. Although I admit it does sound like a practice that Count Dicula would engage in when there aren't any fresh specimens to bite in the neck. Yeah, I know. But that's what that is. And we used it for fun. Now, granted, some physicians were brought in from the SEER program, which is a program that is designed to help American pilots who are down behind enemy lines resist interrogation and torture. And those guys came in and said, We could play loud music at them. We could put them in stress positions. We could hang them by their thumbs. We could waterboard them. Mm-hmm. But I remember way too much. I remember way too much about our crimes against humanity. About our war crimes. I mean, look, Afghanistan and Iraq were just one long, rolling war crime, for which no one has been punished. But I remember how we used Islam as a means of torture. I remember the fact that even after the Pentagon caught an arms manufacturer who was incising Bible verses into the barrel of our service members' rifles and was told not to do it, they just kept doing it anyway because. In this heavily redacted report, which doesn't even tell us the really nasty stuff we did, presumably, we find out that one CIA contractor who was brought on board to torture had a history of arrests for assault and sexual abuse. And the CIA said, hey, sounds like our boy. But no, I remember how weren't there stories coming out of Afghanistan and Iraq about how American soldiers were wanting to grease their ammunition in lard, you know, pig fat, because that would be extra horror-inducing to a Muslim to be shot with a pig fat greased American bullet. I remember the stories of how young recruits at basic training would be taught to think of Afghans and Iraqis as Haji, towel head, camel jockey. Yeah. And so I kind of hate myself for the way that these godforsaken Republican torturers have taught me to think over the last 14 years. Because when I read about the rectal feedings, and then I went to learn what rectal feeding was, and I'm not focusing solely on that, I'm really not. This is just one of the horrors, one of many horrors. I immediately thought about the Christian patriotic fervor that suffuses the American military and has been documented ever so many times by Mikey Weinstein of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. And I had this sudden vision, and I don't like it, and that's why I'm sharing it with you. All we got in common is our misery, and the least we can do is share it. I had this sudden vision of a pair of CIA torturers, perhaps in that place called the Salt Pit, or maybe in Thailand, or possibly in Syria, or how about Poland, any one of which were black sites for us where we did this filthy business, presumably beyond the reach of the Constitution of we the people, trying to make that more perfect union. I had a vision of a couple of torturers. Yeah, hey! Yeah, Phil, hey. Yeah, it's time for Ahmed's rectal feeding. It is? Cool, God bless America. Yeah, let me fire up the Cuisinart here. I got some pulled pork barbecue. We'll just mix it up with a little saline and run it right up his Muslim ass. Take the bet. Tell me you think that's impossible. I dare you to tell me you think that's impossible. I dare you to tell me, well, no American would ever do that, because we would. We froze a guy to death. Whoopsie! We made people stand on legs that were already broken. Oh, and by the way, in case anybody was wondering or about to make the argument, and I know you weren't. Not a shred. Not a jot. Not a tittle. Not an iota of information that could be used to stop some future attack or capture some desperate Islamist was gathered from any of this. Get it all the way down to your toenails, children. We did this for fun. We did this because we wanted to. We did this for vengeance. We did it for retribution. We did it because sometimes it feels good to be as sick and cruel as we can be. Oh, and hey, the guy who spilled the beans on this, he's still in prison, John Kiriakou. We tortured because we could. We tortured because we wanted to. Oh, yes, 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 absolutely, Carol Baker. But head lopping is barbaric and animalistic. We've got to spend millions of dollars a day sending cruise missiles over there because they're barbarian headloppers who learned how to lop heads from the European monarchs and the Crusades and the Knights and the Knights Templars and the Knights of Hospitalers of St. John's and stuff. Barbarians is what they're... Fire! You know, I wonder if I was to just open up the PDF file of those 500 pages. If I was to open up the PDF file of those 500 pages and just start reading it in its dry, banal language. I wonder. How long it would take before we all just shut everything down and walked away. You know, but oddly enough, a half an hour ago I said I was going to cut to the chase, or 25 minutes or whatever. I said I was going to cut to the chase. Finally, then, let us cut to the chase. And cutting to the chase is this. Nothing will be done. Oh, maybe there'll be some tinkering. But the CIA will do this again someday, probably sooner than any of us ever even care to contemplate. They may be doing it now. Yeah, Carol, suddenly headlopping does seem downright humane. Nothing's going to happen. No one's going to be punished. I mean, let's assume for a moment that someone will be punished. Do you think for a minute it's going to be someone getting published who is the person who should be punished? Who are the people who should be punished? I think you and I know. Oh, let's see. While we're at it, there were mock executions. That's along the same lines as what Alan West got drummed out of the military for doing. At one point in time, the CIA actually started a school of torture. Yay, team. Sis, boom. Ah! At the school of torture, the CIA school of torture, the matriculating students learned the abdominal slap. They learned something called walling. They learned the finger press. There were discussions of using insects as torture. Knowing all that, you think they weren't puree and support barbecue? Have you ever seen depictions of what is referred to as the Middle Passage, where Africans kidnapped, stolen away from Africa, were put aboard ships and laid side by side like cigars in a box, only with chains? We revived that too. When we transported the people that we kidnapped, you know, and let's remember, in the heady days of the Afghanistan invasion, we put out a bounty. Wanted, Al-Qaeda members. $5,000. One guy looks at his family and says, you know what, if we could get rid of him over there, we could take his land, and we'd have that much more dirt to farm. Next thing you know, farmer's got 5,000 American in his pocket, and dude is on a one-way trip to Bagram, where he was knocked out, diapered, and chained to the floor of an aircraft horizontally. You know, like cigars, like kidnapped Africans. This is a catalog of sadism such as to make the Marquis de Sade blush with horror. And I repeat, nothing will be done. Even in its sanitized, redacted form, and understand all the business about the sexual torture, the bugs, the caskets, the mock executions, the freezing temperatures, the forced self-defecation and self-urination, all of that, that's the mild stuff. And even in its mild, redacted form, such as we have before us today, it is nothing more than the last act of an impotent Senate. Had this report not been released when it was, it would have simply disappeared down the memory hole. Nothing will be done. God, was it days or was it weeks? Was it a whole month after Barack Obama was elected that he began telling us about looking forward and not back? How long was it after Nancy Pelosi got her hands on the speaker's gavel before she said, or was it even before she got her hands on the speaker's gavel? I can't remember anymore. That she said, impeachment is off the table. Nothing, and I mean that in its purest, most mathematical sense, the empty vacuum of space, all full of that dark matter the physicists tell us about, cannot begin to approach the level of nothing, of the nothing, in nothing will be done. Dick Cheney, because he knows he's got a pass, is running around out there calling the report hooey. Or, as I usually say, Dick Cheney and that decent human being's heart beating in his maleficent body. Nothing will be done. Nothing will be done. Although it should be noted that somewhere during this entire tortured process, there are references in the report to the fact that the FBI agents were freaking out. Nothing will be done. Nothing will be done. I'm sorry, I keep saying that over and over again. Because it's been running like a godforsaken loop in my mind ever since this morning. Nothing will be done! And you and I, Lady Macbeth-like, can walk about our halls, sit in our living rooms, rubbing at our hands, muttering, mumbling, begging for after a time, out, out, damned spot! The dog, whose name is not Spot, will sit by the door and go, why not? This is the kind of stain that will not go away. And we're the ones who are going to do the rubbing of the hands. We're the ones who are going to be hollering out, out, damned spot. George Bush will never say it. Dick Cheney will never say it. Kinda Sleazy Rice will never say it. Paul Wolfowitz, Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, none of them will ever say it. Because they like it. And they know nothing will be done. Asa points out, at least you guys got a Senate report. Stephen Harper in Canada used his power to shut down the government when he learned they were going to ask questions about Afghan detainees being tortured. From where I stand, Asa, that is, and I mean no offense, brother, that is no consolation. That doesn't even rise to the level of an ice-cold hamburger. How do I know? How do I know that we did this because we wanted to, because we were enjoying it, because it was satisfying some sick lizard brain impulse toward vengeance and joyful blood sport? Because it turns out we didn't even ask them, what's your name, and have them go, my name is Jan Janssen, I live in Wisconsin, I work in the lumber mills there, before we started torturing. We tortured them before we asked them who they were. That's in the report, too. They looked at these detainees, most of whom didn't have any information in the first place, and said, all right, you're not talking. You know what we're going to do? We're going to bring your mama in. You can stand here and watch while we fuck her. No, really. We did that. Well, I mean, I didn't do it. You didn't do it. They did it in our names. Because they like it. And there it is. Thank you, Carol Baker. Our government tortures people for fun, and we let our police murder young men of color in the streets, and nothing will be done. As a society, we are lost. Been lost. Been lost. And let's understand something real quick-like. Torturing for the sick satisfaction of engaging in torture, which is what this was. There's no doubt left. Any argument is going to be hair-splitting. Torturing, choking young men, choking men to death on the city street for selling loose cigarettes, gunning down 12-year-olds, breaking a woman's face who's handcuffed. Killing a Down syndrome human being because he wanted to watch a movie a second time. Allowing corporations to poison us one way or another, here, there, or yonder. I think it is rather desperately important to understand that these are not different things. They are, in fact, all the same thing. Because what they are is the subduction of human dignity. The abandonment of human dignity. What? You don't like breathing toxic dust every day? Fuck you, corporate profits. What? You don't like our country, our brave patriots torturing people for sport in your name? Fuck you, America. Fuck you, 9/11. Huh? You want to march in the streets because an 18-year-old kid got gunned down in the middle of the street and had his body left to lay there and bleed out in the hot August sun? Fuck you! Crime prevention. It's all of a piece. The reason a country can go and torture others is because it finds no problem in killing its own. The reason a country can go and torture others is because it already has a prison system in which many of those torture procedures have been perfected. Lindy England of West Virginia didn't figure out how to torture when she got to Iraq. She had been a prison guard across the state line in Maryland. And this just feels like a flashback. I started this all out saying, I'm going to presume that you already know, and here I've run off fulminating for 49 minutes. As if you didn't. But you know. Of course you know. And I presume that you know that what I said is absolutely factual. Nothing will be done. Why, heavens to Betsy. if we were to actually, you know, do something, well, they'd have a hissy over on Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, and we can't have that.
Secretary of Defense during the Reagan administration. All right, KT, your reaction, first of all, on the timing of this release. There's been so much back and forth, and today it comes despite continued objections. And at one time, the objections were coming from the White House. The White House now seems okay with the disclosure. What do you make of it?
Well, there are two things. One is, okay, one thing to actually investigate and do the report. There's another issue, which is, why make the report public? Why make the report public now? There should be one major rule in foreign policy.
Wait, what? You know what? The only way that K.T. McFarland asks that question, why make the report public, is if you have absolutely given up, or perhaps just laughingly sneered at and said, you know, we sure put one over on the rubes, the notion that we really are a self-governing people, that we are not that we govern ourselves and are not the governed. K.T. McFarland, Fox National Security Analyst, says you don't have any business knowing what was done in your name with your money. Gosh, don't you remember Dim Leader back when he was mailing him $300 checks out left and right going, hey, it's your money. Hey, we're going to give it back to you. It's your money. Well, it was your money, too, when it was purchasing rectal feeding apparatus.
Policy like in medicine, first do no harm. I look at all that and say,
well, that, I think that horse is already gone, KT. First do no harm went out the window when dude hung by his thumbs in a freezing room soaking wet and died. Oops.
Okay, one thing to write the report, another thing to do harm by releasing the report publicly.
All right, we have in the past been told, and some Democratic lawmakers have admitted, that they were briefed on these things years and years ago.
Oh, the Democratic lawmakers admitted. What, did you torture him to get it out of it, Fox Blonde?
And we all remember the days after 9/11 when people were afraid. There was some unity.
Oh, we remember being afraid. I remember how afraid I was. I was sitting there having a hamburger in the McDonald's there at my local Wally World, and I was afraid because I was watching the Fox News after 9/11, and they was talking about how the next thing you know, a 6'7" bearded Muslim man was going to leave his cave in Pakistan and carry his portable dialysis machine right over here to Bumfuck Junction and blow up my Wally World and leave us in a heap of smoking rubble. I was afraid in them days after 9/11.
About going after these guys and getting the intelligence that we could. The report is now saying the intelligence didn't really help. These enhanced interrogation techniques didn't really take us anywhere.
She can't say torture either. The memo has apparently already come down. Down from rape it.
Plenty of folks saying, yes, they did. I mean, and they're pointing to specific instances of where those interrogations actually led to actionable intelligence. Your take?
Well, the report is making two claims. One, what was done was illegal. No, it wasn't. The legal advice at the time to the Americans who were conducting these...
Wait a goddamn minute! Legal advice does not make something legal! Next thing you know, we'll be running all the way back to Dick Nixon before he dicks you, talking to David Frost, saying, well, David, if the president does it, it isn't illegal.
Investigations was, yeah, it is legal. And as you point out, it was done in the aftermath of September 11th. I watched those Twin Towers come down. I live in New York.
Oh, well, as long as you watch the Twin Towers come down, absolutely. Let's cram something up a Muslim's ass and call it even, okay?
We assume there was another attack coming imminently. The second thing is,
And of course we didn't have anybody to torture back then to find out if there was anything coming imminently. But then again, if it had been coming imminently, the CIA might have done a little bit of its job like it did on August 6, 2001, when they handed Dim Leader that classified daily briefing that said, Bin Laden determined to strike in U.S., which Dim Leader handed off to Brownie. Heck of a job. I'm going to go cut some brush with my golf cart because I'm afraid of horses.
What was the intelligence gathered? Was it effective? Look, we've had three former directors of the CIA, deputy directors of the CIA, people involved in the hunt for Osama bin Laden. They have all said that they got a lot of intelligence from this. So it was legal. It was a...
So they lied? You know, I love when arguments proceed from statements of unsupported veracity. It was legal. And see, if there'd been a journalist on the other side of the exchange, it would have been, ma'am, you just said it was legal. How is it legal? Well, the lawyer said it was legal. Yeah, okay. If a lawyer said that a Rolls Royce was a banana split, would the Rolls Royce be a banana split? In my world? Hey, I'm covering my ass here.
Effective, why go after it now? Unless the motivation is completely political.
Or unless, maybe... Because, see, I said nothing will be done. And I'm convinced of the truth of that assertion. The factuality of that assertion. Nothing will be done. But you might release it because you actually believe somebody, somewhere. You know, Mark Udall's on the way out the door in the Senate, and he said if this something didn't happen, then he was going to... do whatever he could to make sure it saw the light of day. Yes, Piedra. Very well said. As Martin Luther King wrote in Letter from the Birmingham Jail, we should never forget that everything Adolf Hitler did in Germany was legal. Oh, and sure, I've talked about the fact that George Bush and Count Dicula aren't in chains somewhere. Let's add John Yoo and John Bolton. And that that gang of low rent pissants into the mix too. John Yoo is still teaching law to impressionable young Matlock wannabes out there somewhere, isn't he? I think so. Oh, go on, sister.
Congress is changing hands. The Senate is going from Democrat to Republican hands. And are the Democrats in the Senate just, they've been evicted from the House? Are they just trashing the place before they leave?
Well,
that's what it is. They're just trashing the place before they leave. They're saying ugly things about Merca. Hell yeah. Get a brain, Morans. Go, USA.
Certainly getting the information out there over plenty of objections. KT, always good to see you. Thank you for your expertise.
Thanks, Shannon.
So as we wrestle with whether the report should have been released, maybe the overarching issue here, too, is do the American people have a right to...
Now we've gone over to that exercise in nightmare broadcasting called The Five, featuring Andrea Eric Holder runs the Department of Justice like the Black Panthers' Canteros. Mm-hmm. I didn't say anything about hockey pucks, did I? Hockey puck. No, really. Hockey puck. Hockey puck. Hockey puck.
No. Jesse, your thought.
I don't want to know about it. I think people do nasty things in the dark, especially after a terrorist attack. I find it ironic that they're...
Wait. Huh? No. Fruit jar don't help. Tequila don't help. Just resist, Bob, resist. Let's see here. People do nasty things in the dark after a terrorist attack. Jesse, people do nasty things in the dark in you know, smutty movie theaters, too, but does... Oh, dear.
dropping this report on the same day that Gruber's testifying to knock that out of the front pages.
Gruber Ghazi!
But the Senate Democrats, they're just trying to get one last shot in at Bush before they go into the minority. And they didn't even interview any of the CIA interrogators to do the report. It's kind of like how Rolling Stone does their reporting. They only...
Oh, my God.
Get one side. And, to say that this is about transparency at the CIA, the Democrats didn't care about transparency when they were destroying hard drives at the IRS. So I'm just not...
I didn't think it could be done. But it has been. Thank you. Thank you, Carol. I don't want to know. Who the hell is he? Scarlett goddamned O'Hara? He'll worry about it tomorrow, Carol.
Buying it.
Well, sunlight at the CIA? I'm sorry.
Okay, this is this is where the fun part starts. This is that crabby, cranky Andrea Tanteros.
That's one place I don't need sunlight. I don't think they need to give me a lot of transparency at the CIA. Look, thousands of Americans were killed after 9/11. The Bush administration did what the American public wanted, and that was do whatever it takes to keep us safe. These terror tactics have been stopped because as a country, we decided we are better than this, so we stopped.
Yeah, we're so better than this that we behaved worse than them. It's all sorted out now, isn't it?
Stop them, which is my point. Then why are we putting out this memo? We've had this discussion, we've had this debate, and it's not about democracy now. No, no, it's about politics. It's about Democrats being so fundamentally lost as a party, Harris.
Do you understand the fundamental level at which these people on Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, don't give a good goddamn about this country at all? All they care about is power. They can't see this as a moral debate, as an ethical dilemma, an ethical crisis. Because they have no morals. They have no ethics. Those are all subsumed under the grand heading of show me the money. Give me the power. Of course, it's cheap and easy to say that were Andrea Tanteros to be subjected to even the lightest of the practices outlined and delineated within the torture report, that she would be screaming within the first 2 seconds. No thoracic convulsions for Andrea Tanteros. Oh, no. Oh, no.
They have to return to an old playbook. The plays that they ran right when Obama got into office trying to prosecute CIA officials for these terror tactics, and that same playbook...
No, no, no. See, she doesn't remember we're looking forward and not back. I do.
That they feel got them the House of Representatives back, even under Tom DeLay's electoral map. They were screaming about this. It's how they were winning elections. They have nothing else to talk about, and they don't want to talk about Gruber or health care or the IRS or anything else. All right, but
only because, they're not stories, Gruber, the IRS, or Benghazi. Where's Benghazi? Poor Benghazi's been just left. Nothing will be done. She is right insofar as correct. She is correct insofar as, the Senate is going into Republican hands. And that means as sure as God made little green apples and if you eat too many of them, you'll get the runs. That means nothing will be done. Oh, I don't know. Maybe the House and the Senate can give some awards. Maybe they can give some sort of congressional medal of awesomeness to that CIA contractor who had anger management issues and a previous charge of sexual assault when they turned him into a torturer. They could do that. Well, I think we just annoyed the bejesus out of Sergi. Ugh, again? Well, shit. IRS again. That record is not only broken, it's more desiccated than a 40-years dead animal. Signed, Sergi, my head hit the desk so hard I made a dent in the wood Kyle. Yeah. And then, thank you for the comedy, Ron and Raleigh. Wrecked him! Damn near killed him! Yup, 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 yup! Only in this case, it's true. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you, Kevin. Loud and clear in Colorado Springs, loud and clear in Vermont. Thank you very kindly. Huh. You know what? I'm awfully, awfully glad that it's Tuesday. Do you know why? Because that means we have the Green News Report. And that means I get a 6-minute break in which to go and shower with bleach. I mean, just ick. And see, here's the worst part of it. I've spent an hour in the program now. Thank you, Ron. Loud and clear up here in the frozen north. The packets are passing and the streams are streaming all the way into the far frozen Canadian north. And hell, throw in some of this too. Gotta have something, right? Right. Isaac is absolutely correct. Via Twitter. Instead of prosecuting torturers, the Obama administration prosecuted the guy who revealed the program. John Kiriakou. Still in prison. Arguably a political prisoner. Shh. Don't say something. That's just wrong. But no, what I was saying, nothing will be done. And perhaps it is an open topic to what do we mean by nothing? This incoming useless Congress isn't going to do anything. President Obama has said repeatedly he's not going to do anything. Yeah, we tortured some folks. Remember that line? That was, what, August of this year? Well, we tortured some folks. No, torturing some folks is when you have to listen to Archie Campbell sing on Hee Haw. We murdered some people. We maimed some people. We violated some people. Not folks, people. And just in case there's some sort of sick continuum on this, we did it for no good reason. And we did it illegally. Of course, I'm such a big old liberal sissy that I don't think there's ever a good time for torture. So, there we are, 9 minutes into the second hour of the program. And we'll take a break. Now, this is, of course, Conversation Radio, and the sad damn thing is that we've got other things, we got other outrageous things to go into on this here Titanic Tuesday. God damn if this CIA torture thing isn't an iceberg the size of the world itself. You know how to reach the program, right? Area code 304-574-8178 is line 1. And then there's the Gizmo line. Area code 304-663-HORN. HORN 304-663-HORN. And, of course, you can reach out Skype to Skype. Bob Kincaid Horn is the contact in that event. I want to thank Jay very much. Thank you very kindly, Jay, for helping out. Jay took care of last night's deficit. We need to raise $150 this evening. Really? It'd be better if we could raise $300. It'd be even better if we could raise $600. That's how deep and abiding the bills are. That's how critical things are becoming. Because I knew it was going to be a hard month. PayPal interfaces at headonradionetwork.com. I did not mention the mailing address. If you want to use the mails, just send me a note so that I can let Bossman Wayne know. It's The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV 25801. Checks and money orders should be made payable to The Horn and not Bob Kincaid. So jump in. The conversation's fine. If you don't do that, the filibuster is going to continue. And, oh, we've got stuff to go into. We really, really have stuff to do. But for now, I've got to get that bleach shower and use the Visine bleach. And, oh, dear. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the...
I hurt myself today to see if I still feel. I focus on the pain, the only thing that's real. The needle tears a hole, the old familiar sting. Try to kill it all away, but I remember everything. What have I become? My sweetest friend, everyone I know goes away in the end. And you could have it all, my empire of dirt. I will let you down, I will make you hurt. I wear this crown of thorns upon my liar's chair, full of broken thoughts I cannot repair. Beneath the stains of time, the feelings disappear. You are someone else, I am still right here. What have I become? My sweetest friend, everyone I know goes away in the end. And you could have it all, my empire of dirt. I will let you down, I will make you hurt. If I could start again, a million miles away,
It's Tuesday, December 9, 2014.
My house is broken. My house is broken.
Super Typhoon Hagupit launches 2014 into the record books.
We've got to make sure that it's not adding to the problem of carbon and climate change.
Doesn't look good for the Keystone XL pipeline. Plus,
many developing countries say they can't do much because their priority is getting their people out of poverty, not limiting greenhouse gases.
Rich versus poor. Deep divisions stall UN climate talks.
All of those deep divisions and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Let's talk about the Keystone XL pipeline, all right? We don't build it down to Louisiana. We take it over the Canadian border. We build that big pipe all the way over the Mexican border. We leave the other end of it open with a sign that says Mucho Jobzo. And the people over the border take the thing all the way up, and they end up in Canada. And the Canadians are too polite to kick them out, and there's your immigration policy.
Sounds like a great idea.
That sounds like a ridiculous idea.
This is your Green News Report.
But that's why you're where you are, and I'm where I am.
Okay, Desi Doyen, climate change deniers like to point to the fact that we haven't had any huge hurricanes here in the U.S. of late, but last year around this time we had a super typhoon in the Philippines, and this year we had yet another super typhoon in the Philippines.
Yeah, and of course deniers should remember that the U.S. is not the entire world.
Oh, yeah.
But we'll have more on that in a moment. First, it's not looking good for the Keystone XL pipeline.
Essentially, there's Canadian oil passing through the United States to be sold on the world market. It's not going to push down gas prices here in the United States. It's good for Canada. It could create a couple of thousand jobs in the initial construction of the pipeline, but we've got to measure that against whether or not it is going to contribute to an overall warming of the planet, that it could be disastrous.
That was President Obama on Comedy Central's Colbert Report, increasingly dismissive of the proposed tar sands pipeline from Canada, which is now on hold pending a court case in Nebraska and final approval by the Obama administration. However, congressional Republicans have vowed to force Obama to approve the pipeline next year, probably by attaching it to a must-pass government funding bill.
Has America caught on to the fact that this is a scam, that it has nothing to do with jobs, oil prices, or anything else other than Republicans helping out corporate Canadians?
Polls show that a majority of Americans do approve of the pipeline, but maybe with President Obama talking about what it does and doesn't do, that will affect public opinion.
Maybe that's why he was appearing on the Colbert Report, so that people would actually hear what he had to say.
In the Pacific, another extremely powerful typhoon called Hagupit slammed into the Philippines over the weekend, less than a year after another record-breaking super typhoon, Haiyan, devastated the island archipelago.
At least 27 people have been killed and thousands of homes destroyed.
5,000 people lost their lives in Haiyan last year, but advanced preparation, mass evacuations, and the luck of geography spared the country even worse devastation this year. Still, super typhoon Hagupit was an extremely powerful storm. It launched 2014 into second place for the highest number of extreme Category 5 storms on record, second only to the year 2005. This time last year, after the devastation of Super Typhoon Haiyan, the Philippines delegate at the United Nations Climate Treaty Talks, Yeb Sanyo, cried out for swift action on climate change.
What my country is going through as a result of this extreme climate event is madness. The climate crisis is madness.
This year, deep divisions between rich and poor countries are still stalling progress at the treaty negotiations now underway in Lima, Peru. The ultimate goal is an international emissions treaty in Paris a year from now, with all nations participating. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is personally attending this time in an unprecedented move at this stage to help break the logjam. Very basically, the rich countries want poor countries to commit to emissions cuts, but poor countries, with millions living in devastating poverty who did not cause the problem of global warming, say that rich countries should make deeper cuts and contribute billions in financing to help them adapt to impacts.
And the rich countries have indeed now pledged $100 billion to help those poor countries sort of leapfrog over the development stage. Is that working? Is that going to be enough?
It's not going to be enough. Australia has announced that it is not going to contribute to the Green Climate Fund. And, unfortunately, scientists say the current pledges from countries will not be enough to stave off the worst impacts of global warming.
Canada, have they contributed?
They have, but not much.
So the countries led by right-wingers, like Australia and Canada, aren't doing enough.
That's right.
So they're continuing their support for dangerous fossil fuels.
They want to make lots of money off of it.
Imagine that.
And the U.S., of course, is also not doing enough. We lag behind Europe in cutting emissions because of the stranglehold that the fossil fuel industry has over our domestic politics.
Imagine that. For much more on that story and the others we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help sponsor the Green News Report. Find us and follow us on the Facebook and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Money, money.
I usually like the bumpers, but no, not ABBA. Let's go over to the phone. Jeremy's with us. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Bob.
Simon.
I'm not sure if you got a chance to review that first thing in the 60 Minutes I sent you an email about last night.
Yeah, a little bit, but not in great detail. I've been all obsessed with, the last hour.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, I listened to it in audio form because I had a great fear that having to do with Duke Energy and their coal waste spill that I'd throw something at my TV. I could replace my phone a lot cheaper. So I listened to it in audio form, and I want to say it's the head of Duke Energy. It's a female, or she's relations or something, but she's a big shot there. She had mentioned that in North Carolina, their coal ash pond that leaked the, 500,000 gallons into that North Carolina River did not perform as they expected it to or as it was intended to. But it did. It was placed next to a river with no lining, and it was going to burst sooner or later. They knew it. So she told a bold-faced lie there. At which point I just kind of swallowed my tongue and just held my breath for a while.
Yeah, right. And didn't have the hockey puck handy, did you?
No, I had one, and I had my hand strapped down, too, so I couldn't throw my phone. And the news, the anchor, whoever it was one of their reporters. It wasn't, Laura Logan or anything like that. It was just some other person on 60 Minutes. She kept asking all these questions about safety and this and that, and, it doesn't sound very reasonable that these things would be next to a water stream or a house. And she said, oh, no, they're perfectly safe. They're in the ground deep enough that they'll never leach into, groundwater or something like that or into a nearby stream. And she said, well, what about this failure? She goes, it did not perform as we expected it to. Bullshit. They know these things break all the time. But on 60 Minutes part, they did mention that there's over 500 of these things in North Carolina alone. So after about 20 minutes I've been dickering back and forth about it, they got into how they are going to take care of these problems. And they mentioned the various ways to do it, and I guess one way they put a liner inside the pit and then cover over the top of it, too, so it can't get out. Well, that costs a lot of money. So, of course, they don't want to do that. They want
right,
to do
because,
the next
the, you know, the shareholders will lose a millionth of a penny on the quarterly profit and loss statement.
Right, exactly. And they I lost my track of thought here for a second. Okay, the liners. Yeah, they mentioned how doing the liners in the pit would cost them billions of dollars more to successfully do it. And again, the 60 Minutes credit, they did come out and say that Duke Energy in North Carolina has imploded plant after plant after plant because they're going to clean natural gas, fracking oils and stuff like that. But they've imploded them, and they did say when Duke leaves, they leave their shit where it was. They don't take care of it. They just leave it there hoping that it will stay there forever on the ground.
Right, as we have recently learned with the, what was the name of that plant on the Yadkin River? That's leaching orange goo?
This is the one I think they're talking about in specific was the one on the Yadkin River. And so basically she said, we're researching the best methods to do this. And the reporter kept trying to nail her down and say, well, why don't you just put a liner in it? Line it while it's in there, line it, cover up the top, too, with a solid top, And she would just kept saying no. She said, no, a solid top is a feasible way to do it, and we don't have the science yet to show that it isn't safe to do it that way.
And you know why that is? I mean, there may be a scintilla of truth in that statement, Jeremy. Because...
Yeah, a scintilla.
A solid top would have mass, which, with gravity added to it, involves weight. I'm probably already screwing up the engineering. And
right.
It has to be supported by something. Now, at this, and what's supporting the whole thing is a dam, you know, an impoundment. Sounds like there's, like, you know, low-jacked cars, you know, sitting in it or something. But it's made of dirt. And that's where the whole...
Right.
That's where the whole disaster began. The dirt dam gave away. Now, there's more than, I think, more than 100, for instance, of those dirt dams in West Virginia alone. And they're holding back billions of gallons of toxic waste from coal, from the coal industry, from the cleaning process. In one case, one dam, as you've heard before, is rated to hold 9.8 billion gallons. Well, that you know, that's not a hole in the ground. That's a holler, okay? That's a holler that used to be full of life. And you can't put a liner in that because you can't. You can't put a top over it either because there's already so much hydrologic pressure on the dirt dam in the first place that the things are barely holding as it is. Now, if you ask it to hold up the support structure of a lid, well, screw it. It's done. It'll collapse the day after they get the lid on. So to that extent, maybe she was there was a scintilla of truth involved. But it doesn't really matter. The liner business, and it doesn't matter. Because these things are going to fail. They're not built like the ancient pyramids. They're not built like the pyramids of Chichen Itza or Merida or Tikal or Giza. Those things were built for the ages, and even they're crumbling after a few thousand years. And they were built of solid stone. These things are built of dirt. And
yeah, earthen dams don't last forever.
And they're going to fail. They are going to fail.
Right. So, I mean, I basically, I just took away from it. It was kind of, they softball a lot of questions. And yes, she tried to nail down this spokesperson for Duke, but you can also see that they're kind of talking out their ass about a lot of things, too, where she's trying to give excuses for this and that, and we cleaned it up perfectly. There's no more damage. We let all the damage down. Nothing got downstream. I'm just a bunch of stuff. Just crazy stuff.
Yeah, and see that ultimately, they can't say, well, you know, these things aren't going to be here forever. Because then people will start going, well, I got one of them a couple miles away from me. When's it going to fail? I need to leave. Because there's not one of them safe. Not one. But you can't say that because then people really will freak them out. You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Other than that, I don't know what to say. I just want to fill you in on that, let other people know if they didn't watch it. It was a piece that was, I don't know what it was even worth watching. I mean, I guess there's half-truths in it, but it was more irritating than anything. It just seemed like another cover piece for the coal industry or the dying parts of it anyway, which are going to clean gas, which we all know means fracking, so they're doing other destruction in other places now.
And but there is a takeaway on this, Jeremy. As is the case with all the other coal filth that's been left all over the Appalachians, it's going to be left to we the people to fix. So, not that I want to let the coal industry or Duke Energy or anybody off the hook, but I do want to acknowledge reality, because that's where we live. Man, if you drop your little youngin off at the daycare center down in the Coal River Valley, that is right in front of the Brushy Fork impoundment dam. You're living in reality world every day. Because here's the fun part: the children in that daycare share the same building with the state police detachment, the first responders. So when that goddamn thing goes, look who goes first. Yeah, really.
First of all, and the kids.
And people can't cope with that. But at the end of the day, I was trying to avoid using that phrase. I've gotten to where I hate it. It's going to be our mess. And we need to address it and clean it up and work on it sooner rather than later. And when I say sooner, I mean like 30 years ago. But tomorrow would be a start. It's kind of like climate change that way. The longer you wait, the more grave the disaster becomes. Just by way of example, we had, and of course it's nothing to compare with what Sparky's dealt with the Pineapple Express, but we had a ton of rain here in Appalachistan the last few days. It only let up on maybe Sunday, and now snow's coming tonight or tomorrow.
Yeah, we're facing that right now. Lefty was up here with me right now.
But we got, I mean, everything squished. Everything was wet. I mean, it was just, you know, you walked and the earth just, like, sucked your shoes off. And when rain falls like that around here, we start worrying. Because all that has to happen, as the Buffalo Creek disaster in 1972 taught us, all that has to happen is enough rain falls that the dam gets overtopped, and then, you know, it's Katie bar the door and it's hell among the yearlings.
Right.
Because, I mean, it's game on. And people watch that around here. And we need to fix it. We need a coal ash Appalachia Marshall Plan. We need a plan that will actually relieve us of these inherent terrors. And you know what? After we fix it, let's bankrupt every goddamn coal company in the country, making them pay for their share of the mess.
Amen.
That's fine by me. Because remember, as far as mountaintop removal is concerned, less than 3% of all the mountaintop removal sites in Appalachia have been reclaimed within the meaning of the law expressed in the Surface Mine Control and Reclamation Act. Less than 3%. If we had a federal program that would actually take that to 100%, every strip miner in the country would have a job for a generation or more. We would need more people to do those heavy equipment jobs. But that offends the coal industry. So we dare not talk about it, except for, you know, places like here. Sorry, didn't mean to filibuster on your nickel.
No, it's fine. I'm not paying. But other than that, I will let you go. Someone else can speak.
All right, sounds good. Jeremy, you have yourself a good evening.
You too, thanks.
Bye. Calling from Vermont, that's our buddy Jeremy. Both lines are open, 304-574-8178. Or 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. And, yeah, I'm gonna beat on this a little bit tonight. We got $150 to raise tonight somehow or another. And if anybody wants to kick in $100 right off the bat, we've got a really, really special premium for you. So, you know, a pound of hand-harvested wild rice from the pristine waters of northern Wisconsin. So just let me know, okay? Where to go? Let's go to a note from Ron in Raleigh, down in North Carolina stand. Subject line, waste ponds. Our governor, grinning Pat McCrory, who worked for Duke Power for 30 years, has been trying to figure out how to get the people of North Carolina to pay for the cleanup of the ash spills. And see, the people of North Carolina don't need to do that. We, the people of the United States, who have ridden the backs of Appalachia for 125 years, need to pay for that. We had a hand in it, didn't we? You know, back when, you know, when you walk over to the wall and you flip the switch and the lights come on, and you go, huh, how about that? My house is just full of electricity. Electricity comes from the wall socket. No, it doesn't. It comes from here. Or it comes from Alabama. or it comes from southern Illinois. Now a lot of it comes from the Powder River Basin of Wyoming. But it comes at a terrible cost that is externalized upon our communities. And so, yeah, it is ours to clean up. We are not blameless in this any more than we're blameless in torture. Okay? We're not. Because that's the way the system works. The system works by making us all complicit in these horrors. No matter how hard we try not to be, and I know we do try. I know you don't leave lights on in empty rooms. I know you probably run your thermostat lower than you're comfortable with in winter and higher than you're comfortable with in summer, because you know that they blow mountains up and poison people for that. Now, the setup for this, setup's probably not the right word. Let's just call this a tale of two teachers. We'll try to put torture to the side for a little bit. We'll put the poisoning of Appalachia aside for a little bit. But a tale of two teachers. News Ninja Carol Baker put me onto this a couple of nights ago, and I have waited to see it sort of see the light of day so that we could discuss it. It's a little bit complicated, but it's really not that complicated. Marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas, Stan, are you out there this evening? Because you might have an interest in addressing some of this, just given your expertise. So we start on Facebook. And we understand that sometimes on Facebook, unless one is very careful to try to avoid them, one gets, well, okay, yeah, I agree, Carol in the chat room, we need Diane tonight. One can, you know, and when you see one going on, it's kind of interesting to watch because you feel like you're just watching a slow-rolling train wreck. Flame wars. And there was a flame war the other night, but and I'm sure it was just one of millions. But this one took on a special relevance. It all starts when an individual makes a Facebook posting, and his name has been published, so I think it's fair here, and he's the good guy in this. An individual by the name of Colin Lively, who is out of New York City. Colin Lively posted on Facebook a statement saying that he supported Attorney General Holder's declaration that the Justice Department would investigate the shooting death of 12-year-old Tamir Rice. Okay. Carol, tell me if I'm getting any of this wrong. Seems a fairly, of course, I agree. I would like to see the word vigorous in front of the word investigation. Then again, I would like to see Attorney General Eric Holder investigate the people responsible for the rectal torture and the hanging by the thumbs torture. God damn it, I said we were going to get away from that. So that's what Colin Lively posted, that he was in favor of a Department of Justice investigation of the shooting death of 12-year-old Tamir Rice. Ordinarily, one would think that that was a fairly innocuous statement. People are entitled to their opinions, right? But ever lurking out there, and I remember I always think of our buddy, Brother Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin. When something like this will come up and he'll say, Nicola Post, Bob, Nicola Post. Because we remember when that story came out a few years ago saying that the right wing was merrily paying trolls a nickel a post to go in and just, you know, defecate all over any discussions where liberals and progressives were talking about liberal and progressive ideas. Nickel a post, Bob, nickel a post. Enter a senior lecturer named Deborah O'Connor. Now, nobody necessarily knew this at the time, but Deborah O'Connor was an adjunct faculty member at the Florida State University College of Business. And she decided to... And she wasn't, okay, she wasn't even one of Mr. Lively's friends. They had a mutual friend, I think. I think that's how this all shakes out. But all of a sudden, she pops into, Ms. O'Connor pops into this conversation. And she doesn't like any of that talk as to how the police need to be investigated for killing a 12-year-old boy. Okie dokie. And it gets ugly real fast. I mean, speed of the internet fast. Our own dear beloved news ninja Carol Baker was watching this thing roll out in real time. And it's, I mean, it is nothing if not a nightmare. And, you know, there was some badinage over it all. But then Ms. O'Connor got involved. At which point, having, I guess, taken a look at Colin Lively's profile, said, and in the news article, it's, these words are redacted. There's that word. She used an anti-gay slur. Take your northern fill-in-the-blank elitism and shove it up your ass, she wrote. Not content with that, I guess these trolls like to afford themselves some degree of credibility that they yearn for or something. So she said, among other things, I teach at a university, you fill in the blank. What do you do? You're an intellectual fraud, just like your messiah. See, they always do that. The right-wing trolls, the birthers, deathers, tenthers, deathers, birchers, booger eaters. They like to use that word. Your messiah, Obama. You're an intellectual fraud, just like your messiah. Obama has single-handedly turned our once-great society into a ghetto culture, rivaling that of Europe. Really? Europe has a ghetto culture. Psalm bitch. And people watching this, and after the I'm a university professor, you faggot, got a little concerned. And so, lo and behold, an email went out to just about everybody in a position of authority at Florida State University that they could find, sharing this entire thread. The note said, among other things, I usually give people a pass, but once I saw that she had a position of responsibility teaching our children, that's what put me over the edge. My thought is that when you are a teacher, you are held to a higher standard. Well, you can kind of call this a win for the good guys, because Florida State University College of Business senior lecturer Deborah O'Connor, and you can read all about this at the Tallahassee Democrat, tallahassee.com. You know, this woman is a virulent homophobe, apparently, in addition to being an Obamaphobe, a liberalophobe, progressiveophobe, and just a hateful person in general. By the next morning, she was having a little tete-a-tete with her bosses, who did not fire her, but suggested she might wish to resign, which she has. Unable to resist continuing to talk, unable to resist digging when she is already in a hole, this alleged PhD, I teach at the university, what do you do? Told the Tallahassee Democrat, I've learned my lesson about Facebook. Let's just leave it at that. I decided to resign because I didn't think it was feasible to drag myself and Florida State through that kind of mud. Apparently, in the Florida State University School of Business, she teaches in the marketing department. That one jumped out at me, I admit. Really? Hey, asshole, buy our soap! See? Marketing 101. No. And this is interesting. The way the Tallahassee Democrat wraps up the story is by saying O'Connor's resignation comes 1 week after 5 Wakulla County sheriff's deputies were placed on paid administrative leave for comments they made on Facebook in reaction to protests in Ferguson. And I thought for a minute, wait a minute, is that the same story that we had last week of the guys in Ohio? No, that's a different bunch of cops who are texting and tweeting their hatred of people with skin darker than theirs back and forth and back and because this was on Facebook. And that's 5 deputies of the apparently Wakulla County. I didn't know there was a Wakulla County, but apparently there is. I don't know all my Florida counties. There's a Wakulla County Sheriff's Department, and 5 of their Sheriff's Department members were Facebooking away probably about the thugs. Y'all can look up the story. I didn't have time. Is there an object lesson in this? Yeah. Don't be an asshole on Facebook. I try to resist it. And I know most everybody does in this little community. Lesson number 2. The "Do you know who I am?" argument is usually not a winner. Right? Query coming in from Irish Dave. I was thinking, and you know how painful that can be, isn't that business department a wholly owned subsidiary of Coke Industries? Well, I don't know, Irish Dave. You got Linky? Let's also take something else into consideration. This woman was an adjunct, a senior lecturer. Had she had tenure, this would have been a much more difficult case. Maybe that's why she doesn't have tenure. Maybe the Florida State University College of Business Department of Marketing knew that she was a loose cannon rolling around. But Jesus, don't you feel sorry for the parents who send their precious lumpkins to Florida State, and this is what teaches them? Can you imagine sitting through a lecture with that? Ow! So that's story number one of A Tale of Two Teachers. We have accounts here of two teachers who are at this moment without a job. Let's establish that as a basic bit of groundwork. Teacher number one, Florida State University College of Business senior lecturer Deborah O'Connor, is without a job because Florida State University College of Business senior lecturer Deborah O'Connor couldn't resist taking her racism out and her homophobia and her everything else hateful out for a walk on somebody's Facebook page that she didn't even know. Because she's absolutely plumb gurgling, bubbling over the top with her hatred for that Kenyan Muslim you slurper in our White House. Let us then travel over to the new Republican wonderland of New Mexico. This report comes from a community called Rio Rancho, New Mexico, of which I know next to nothing. My New Mexico geography is severely limited. The institution of learning in question is one Cleveland High School. The class involved was not marketing, but instead creative writing. I've actually been in a couple of creative writing classes. They're not as easy as they sound. But this is a high school. And presumably, if you're in creative writing in high school, it's a decent bet that you want to be in creative writing in this high school class. The teacher in question here is a lady by the name of Katrina Guaraschio. I hope I'm pronouncing that somewhere near to correct. In arts classes, and that encompasses creative writing, acting, dance, music, speech, one is often asked, even at a high school level, to try to get outside the methodology of a whole lot of the rest of the curriculum that is based upon the absorption of received wisdom and regurgitation thereback. I don't think that's a word, is it, thereback? In creative writing, it is. I, for my part, remember being a young acting student down at the University of Alabama Stan, and yeah, because it was some sort of an offshoot of the Meisnerian method, which is an offshoot of Boleslavsky, which is an offshoot of Stanislavsky. Never mind. And laying on the floor of a studio, on my back, along with about 20 other acting students, on my back, on our backs, envisioning ourselves, willing ourselves through our sense memory experience to be a piece of sizzling bacon on a hot iron griddle. No, I'm not going to make a torture comment right now. Keep rolling. And if you're taking it seriously, you got to bust your ass to be that piece of sizzling bacon. I mean, you have to look deep inside you to feel your baconness. Because this is an act of art. This is an act of creativity. Well, there are exercises in creative writing, too. Exercises to get the young scribes to expand their imaginations. Because it is creative writing. It's not technical writing. It's not insert screw A into hole B, tighten. It is, in fact, an attempt to plumb some corner of the imaginative universe. So, Katrina Guaraschio, there at Cleveland High School in Rio Rancho, New Mexico, gave her students a fairly simple assignment. Take a fairy tale or a legend and retell that fairy tale or legend in a modern context. Right? Well, here's what happened. One student took the assignment, took it seriously, and went to the gospel account of Yeshua feeding a multitude miraculously with a little handful of loaves and fishes. Loaves and fishes probably don't mean a hell of a lot to a high school student in New Mexico. It may be the land of enchantment, but it ain't the land of water, which is sort of a condition precedent for fishes. But this high school student did understand the message that Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, had about easing the suffering of our fellow humans. So this student rewrote the miracle of the loaves and fishes, replacing the loaves and fishes with cannabis. Cannabis that Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, then passed out miraculously to the multitude in order to ease their pain. Any problems? Anybody? Horn Family Commune Congregation? Problems? Well, you don't, but somebody did. This is where it gets bad. In the course of this creative writing class, you don't just write your thing and hand it into the teacher, and the teacher checks to make sure that you're correctly using semicolons, don't have any run-ons or comma splices, and hell, it's creative writing, and you can probably get away with those anyway. No. The students in this creative writing class are introduced to the concept of peer review, where people doing the same kind of work you're doing look at the work you did while you're looking at theirs. And in a spirit of mutual support, you critique each other's work. And yes, this is where the trouble started. Because the student's retelling of the fable, myth, or fairy tale of Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, miraculously giving out free cannabis in order to relieve the suffering of his fellow humans, was deeply offensive to some precious lumpkin who was a Bible-believing Christian. Sorry, that's tomorrow. Well, precious lumpkin runs home and says, Mama, Mama, Daddy, Daddy. Wrong accent, I'm sure. You're never going to believe what we had to do in creative writing class today. We had to write a story retelling a fairy tale for modern times. I wrote Jack and the Beanstalk. Only the beanstalk was a cross. I'm making this part up. But Jimmy Dale over there, you know what he done, Mama? You know what he done, Daddy? He said Jesus was a fairy tale, and the teacher didn't even call him down for it and tell him that Jesus is our personal Lord and Savior, what was sent to earth to get us forgiven for our sins, and he went to hell for 3 days and everything and rose up and come back from the grave and walked around and healed people. And you know what he did? Well, you know what else, Mama and Daddy? He didn't just say Jesus was a fairy tale. He said when Jesus gave everybody them loaves and fishes, that's a fairy tale too. And instead, he said if Jesus was here today, he'd give everybody the dope. And they'd be injecting their doobies into their arms and dying. I'm not kidding. Precious Lumpkin went home and bellyached to Mama and Daddy about what a heretic Miss Guaraschio is. She has, by the way, taught at that school for 8 years. She's out of a job now. Like I said, I made all the dialogue up about what Precious Lumpkin said when Precious Lumpkin got home. I made that up. Nobody said anything about injecting any doobies. That's creativity. I learned it in creative writing class, transferring it to creative broadcasting. But the reality is that Precious Lumpkin did go home, piss and moan to Mommy and Daddy. Mommy and Daddy got on their high Christian horse, and veteran professional educator Karen Guaraschio resigned rather than be dragged through the hell, torment, and damnation of being persecuted by some dirt-ignorant Christian. I wish I was kidding. Over on her Facebook page, see, Ms. Guarasquillo didn't call anybody anything. She said, I think it is interesting that the reply from district from a woman I've never met and has never been in my classroom was that I refused to conduct my class in a professional manner, yet I was professional enough for them for the last 8 years. Once again, showing how RRPS, Rio Rancho Public Schools, does not acknowledge their teachers' hard work and sacrifices. KOAT also didn't mention that this was a case that had been going on since October and that the student who complained actually boasted to her classmates about how she was going to get her teacher fired. But overall, at least I don't look like a jackass, do I? No, that's Professor Connor, ma'am. She looks like a jackass. Is there a lesson? I don't know. I will leave lessons for you and conclusions for you to draw. This is, after all, conversation radio. Would you care to respond? Do you know how to? The phone numbers? Is this? Yeah. 304-574-8178. 304-663-4676. 304-663-HORN. God, that's cool and easy. One teacher is out of job because she tried to do her job. The other teacher is out of a job because she thought her job extended to the public sphere and allowed her to use sexual epithets to attack another human being. Okay? Let's go to said gizmo line. By Jove, I think we have Diane from Kansas, Stan. Is that right?
Bob, I'm calling because I was conjured.
Yes, you were conjured.
Right, but not because I have any lesson, although it's very interesting, the juxtaposition of these two incidents. I think the second one is easier to comment on, frankly.
Well, then stand not upon the order of your comment, and comment at once.
Well, I mean, we're talking creative writing. And I heard nothing in the parameters of the assignment that said, this is creative writing, but you don't go here, you don't go here, you don't say that, because that would just negate the whole exercise of creativity and imagination.
Right. Boundary, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that one, to me, is easy. The assignment was what it was. And to me, the student's freedom of expression within the, you know, within the context of that assignment, that's at stake too, and I think that's been jeopardized. So I think it's incorrect for the school not to back that teacher, but, you know, this must be political and there must be pressures that are coming to bear, but it's not only her right to due process at minimum and her right to have academic freedom within the boundaries of what's professional to teach in creative writing. But I think it also goes to the student being, you know, harangued and kind of smacked down and put in a box. So, it, you know, to me, that's an easy one.
Well, what I find interesting is that Ms. Guarasquillo was initially put on administrative leave pending investigation.
This is the creative writing
Yes.
scenario. Yeah.
But then they accused her of not running her classroom in a professional manner.
Who's they? Do you know?
The Rio Rancho Public School District. The administrators.
Gotta watch those administrators.
I have no doubt.
I think, well, you know, there's so many angles at which one can enter this discussion. I mean, you know, if one has tenure, which an instructor, no matter if she's senior or not, she doesn't have the protection of tenure. Florida probably doesn't have collective bargaining protection. I'm obviously going to the Florida example. And, but then if you go back to the creative writing example, it's, you know, it's the same question. What protection does a teacher have to due process, to the teachers association supporting her, to, I mean, a lot of times these schools point to their own policy documents to explain what they're going to do or what they think they can do. So.
Well, what's interesting in the Florida State case is that in the course of asking questions, the Tallahassee Democrat found out that Florida State University, for tenured or non-tenured, for none of their employees, they do not have a policy about vitriolic or any sort of improper conduct on social media. And, yet at the same time, and I'm not condoning his conduct, I'm simply observing that this occurred, their quarterback, Jameis Winston, got sat down for a game or so, or a half, I'm not sure how much, got sat down for a game because of a really foul-mouthed, vile, nasty rant that he engaged in public on campus.
Not on media, not on social media, just talking.
If I'm recalling correctly, I think he said it. He didn't type it.
I don't know. I don't know what the athletic department has in writing, and
well, he was already kind of in the doghouse anyway because of the really, really creepy, horrifying rape allegations against him from last year.
God, well, now that's really something to discuss, isn't it?
Well, it is.
So, a few years back, I did an interview about social media, and at the time, all I could really say is, not coming from an ethics perspective, because, you know, I certainly don't have all the answers or anything, but I can point to policies and procedures and trends and best practices and stuff like that. At the time, I could see the corporations were starting to draft their social media policies, and some were front runners, like Best Buy. You know, they were on it. And so what I could say in that interview is, well, if they're going to have a policy, then it's incumbent upon them to train their employees and have periodic reminders and maybe even workshops. They have a lot of that training on video too, but you see what I mean. I'm kind of coming out on the side of procedural justice here.
Yeah,
due
sure.
process. And I do feel like that, it's kind of dicey with that Florida instructor. I mean, with due process for her really served, because the tenured people, that probably would have, as you pointed out, there would have been a different discussion with the tenured person. And
you know, in higher education, the proliferation of adjuncts.
Oh yeah. And boy, we really rely on them too. And, you know, it really is horrifying to think that someone with those prejudices, that person's in dealing with students on campus and all that, but, you know, that's probably a reality. That's probably a reality. There's just some kind of diciness about fairness here, because another person might have had the opportunity to be dragged over to the equity office and go through some training and get some clarification. And another thing about that, if she didn't identify herself with that university per se, as I'm understanding it, she wasn't acting like a spokesperson. Someone would have to put...
No, but she did say, I'm a university professor.
Yeah.
And the other thing that comes out of all of it, Diane, is, not once did she ever apologize. She said, I've learned my lesson about social media.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I was surprised. Usually with your right-wingers, you get the non-apology apology, you know, the one where I'm sorry if you were offended.
Yes. Right. No, she sounds like a reprehensible person, quite frankly, but I'm a little uncomfortable in wherever I see power differentials and stratification. You know what I'm talking about? It's like that would be the low-hanging fruit to tell an instructor bye-bye without giving the due process that others who perhaps have the same teaching load have access to. And this goes to another thing. Someone told me that, well, see, at where I am, the state drafted a social media policy, and the faculty senate just said, forget it. And there, the two sides had to sit down and iron out a policy that went through faculty senate, and I haven't seen what it is. But we're also told that we can't write letters to the editors and, like, sign our name, you know, as affiliated with the university. And so there are these things we all have to think about, and I have to be kind of – I'm really sensitive because I'm on the website as a media expert, meaning the reporters find me. I do speak with the title by my name, you know. Mm-hmm. And I put a Chinese wall in my head. I literally do. I think I told you I have to edit myself a lot.
Yes.
So there's a point where I've actually stayed away from Facebook because I don't want to get into any habits that interferes with that really strong editing I have. You know what I mean?
I
don't want to get sloppy. But now I'm told, so there's all that. We're all told we have to be careful, and no one's told me to be especially careful, but I just know that when I'm on the website as a media expert and the university is pitching me to reporters and all, that I have responsibility. So no one has to sit me down and say anything about that. But at the same time, given that internal self-control and the controls coming from the regents, the body that oversees education here.
Right.
Bill Snyder, I'm told, stood in public and endorsed Pat Roberts for senator using his position.
Well, yes, and
that's not supposed to happen.
And to ask a whole bunch of Kansans, especially the ones who love Kansas State, and not the Rock Chalk Jayhawk bunch.
Yeah.
They think that he walks on water. I mean, good God. The man retired, you know, he was the coach of the Kansas State Wildcats for a million years.
Uh-huh.
And then having earned his rest, he retired. And then Kansas State started sucking air again.
Yeah.
And they went back to him and said, please, Coach Snyder, won't you come back out of retirement? And in return for him coming out of retirement, they named the stadium there, you know this better than I do, they named the stadium there in Manhattan the Bill Snyder Family Football Stadium.
Oh, yeah, I went there once.
But football coaches are notorious for leveraging their in many circles, I would say, for leveraging their star power, if you will, in politics. Let me give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
I went to West Virginia University during the heyday of a guy named Don Nealon. It was said that Don Nealon and Billy Graham shared in common the fact that they were the only two people who could get West Virginians to jump to their feet and scream Jesus Christ.
Oh my God.
You know, one because he's Billy Graham and the other because, awful things happened. But anyway, Don Nealon, having retired, at least he waited to retire, once remarked, you know what? These regulations are killing our coal industry. What we need to do is to be able to mine coal more like China does. Now, China, meanwhile, loses 10,000 coal miners a year in the death trap hell holes that are their coal operations. But he did that. And the guy who was Marshall's football coach during their more recent heyday, Bob Pruitt, retired and became, I'm Bob Pruitt, and I'm a friend of coal. And of course, for the last several years, it ended this year, Marshall and West Virginia played together in what was in a rivalry match that began every season called the Friends of Coal Bowl. And, of course, my beloved football team at home games, before they run onto the field, have to rub a hunk of coal from the upper Big Branch mine, Diane. That is more than metaphysically soaked with the blood of 29 incinerated coal miners.
Yep.
But I have to share a message with you from your biggest fan, Carol Baker.
Hi, Carol.
She said, see, this is why we needed marvelously coherent Diane to call in. She's adding a layer of perspective to this conversation I hadn't considered. She needs more cowbell, Bob.
Well, it's kind of where I live and breathe, but I see it as, you know, like, as an ordinary citizen, I would like to just leap to the conclusion in the first case, but I really can't, given the world I live in. I see that a football coach can do one thing that we're not supposed to do. You see what I mean? There's such power differentials that, I find what she did reprehensible. But, you know, there's not a lot of case law on the social media thing. Last time I looked, I couldn't find a lot of...
No, in the cases of where corporate America is concerned, what they're simply doing, as has been pointed out to me by our good friend Randy in PA, some job interviews demand that you turn over your Facebook password, and that really raises privacy issues. But they'll say, are you on Facebook? They'll even ask for your password. They'll ask, you know, do you tweet? Are you on Twitter? And it raises real ethical issues. Now, I'm doing a little bit of speculating here, Diane, but I'm guessing that, I mean, you probably got a pretty good idea of what that conversation sounded like in the office, too. Now, ma'am, we don't want to fire you, but, you know, this really does reflect poorly on the you. Why don't you just go ahead and resign?
Remind me, was there going to be a lawsuit, or they're just speculating?
There's no mention of one.
Yeah, this is reputational. They're going on the they're trying to minimize the reputational damage, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, get this, you know, so far the Tallahassee Democrat has it, but the New York Times doesn't. But the other side of this coin, Diane, and it's one I don't know if you considered, but we have to consider all facets of the social dynamic in this country. If this story gets any legs at all, this woman will be picked up and offered a tenure track position at Bob Jones University, Jerry Falwell University, Pat Robertson University, Oral Roberts University, and like I said, if it gets any legs at all, she will be trotted out and bruited as a Christian martyr by people like the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi, Stan.
No, I hadn't thought of that, because to me that would be like being in hell to be on one of those campuses. So, no, but I hear what you're saying.
Do you disagree?
Pardon?
Do you disagree?
Oh, no, I don't disagree. I hadn't thought of it, because to me those are such bad choices, but for her they're great choices. Oh, I don't disagree, Bob. That's probably what's going to happen. And maybe that's why who knows how soon they contacted, how quickly they might have contacted her. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I think back to when that member of the House of Representatives from South Carolina, that guy named Wilson, whose name isn't really Joe, hollered, "You lie!" during the State of the Union address. Didn't he raise like $500,000 in the 24 hours after he did that?
Well, I have some memory of that, but what you're raising is you're right. That's getting to be a common dynamic, isn't it? It is getting to be a common dynamic. Like someone loses their radio show, when they'll be picked up by WorldNet Daily or something, depending on the issue. Yeah, you're very attuned to that. I hadn't really thought of that because, like I said, I was being a little egocentric and because I would never consider being at one of those schools to be a good career move, but I guess for her, that's a whole different story. So, sure. That, I wonder if we'll ever hear about that. I wonder if we'll hear where she lands.
It would be interesting.
Interesting. It'd be an interesting research project. So, yeah, social media. It's more and more like you're saying. It's in with the HR. The HR department has their hands on it in corporations.
Sure.
But it's all about
But Diane, it's also a matter of who you are. I mean,
consider
that series of tweets from Rupert Murdoch the other day about this god-awful Exodus movie that's due to open soon.
Christian Bale.
Yeah, the one where all the Hebrews and all the Egyptians are white. And of course it's being distributed by Fox. And so Rupert Murdoch entered the fray over the question of the whitewashing of the movie and said, "Oh, now plenty of white Egyptians, don't you? All the Egyptians, all their nine of white. What's all the fuss?" And of course, you know, he's Rupert Murdoch, so there will not be any repercussions.
That's the problem I have with the first scenario at Florida, that it's selective. Well, first of all, they don't have a policy to enforce, which
right.
is a problem.
I bet they will by day after tomorrow, though,
well,
don't they?
Well, if the Kansas Board of Regents hopped on the social media policy a year ago, or maybe longer, I would just think that others were, you know, doing it. They should.
Okay.
I mean,
So can I ask you to speculate here, understanding that we are engaging in the rankest form of speculation? Would that we think you ought to resign speech, would that have been given if she was the best adjunct marketing professor in the business department? Or do you think that there may have been something, you know, that maybe her annual evaluations weren't so hot in the first place, or? Do you get the nature of my question?
Oh, I do. I mean, it could have been. I don't know that culture, obviously, but you're right to speculate because
by the way, I'm reminded in the chat room by Carol Baker. Yes, she used the anti-gay slur that begins with F. She used the hateful word that has an E, an R, two G's, and an N that isn't ginger. And then she also made reference to rodent Muslims.
Yeah, it's a wonder she's on campus anywhere. But I'm having a little bit of a pause here, not because I condone any part of that sentiment or language or engagement, but because I know that there are people on campus who have personal opinions, and they bracket it. They bracket them functionally.
Oh, absolutely, and I can go way back in time. I think I've mentioned him before. One of the most magnificent professors that I had at WVU was in the religion department. I had him for one of the last classes I took there. We got on fabulously.
I was as liberal then as I am now,
maybe more so, you know. This was during Reagan. I despise Ronald Reagan. This guy taught me the Synoptic Gospels dispassionately, with no proselytization, strictly focused on the academics of it. And then later on, I find out that this guy's writing, you know, these right, just vitriolic right wing screeds to the local paper. Talking about the filthy liberals and stuff, and I'm like, really? That's the same. But he did exactly what you're describing, Diane. He had bracketed it.
Yeah, I mean, I know people like that, and I don't even know how much it goes on because by its very nature, we're talking about something that, like, you didn't have access to knowing what was going on, and I know that I don't. I just have some anecdotes where I'm in the parking lot and someone will let something slip, you know, as they're walking to their car with me or something, and I'm thinking, oh, that doesn't sound very, you know, I'm setting aside liberal and conservative. I'm thinking that doesn't sound very egalitarian or humanitarian.
Yeah, but see, I have to point something out right here, Diane, and this is the beauty that you bring with your marvelous coherence to these conversations. And it's also the beauty that we share as the Horn Family Commune congregation. And that is, we are liberal, we are progressive. And so we do ask hard questions, even when it's someone with whom we philosophically or morally disagree or find repugnant, because things like equal protection really do matter. They are real things. They are not legal fictions that we simply brush aside when we feel like we need to torture someone. They are real for us. And let us therefore consider, for instance, the conversation we're having about this woman at Florida State versus the way Ward Churchill was treated when he said that the chickens had come home to roost.
Oh, really? That was just over the top.
Do you see what a broad gulf exists between the right-wing response and the liberal progressive response?
I think it has something to do with deliberation and seeing. I really don't know where their minds are, but they seem to be frozen in some pathway. Like you go from here to here to here, whereas, you know, you and I and others, we like to contextualize things, and before I leap to conclusions, I usually like to look at different sides and compare the power differentials or precedent or, you know, on and on. On and on.
Yeah. A little gap-filling from Carol via the chat room. She didn't have tenure, and no one minded the personal attacks. Her problems came when she proudly announced her position in forming young minds at Florida State.
Right, but she didn't say Florida State.
I'm not so sure about that.
Oh, well, then, I mean, see, that makes a difference to me, to announce. I mean, because we get federal money on campuses. It's really very serious that we treat people equally. I mean, because of federal money involved and the law, and because there's a real sentiment on many campuses, including the one I'm at, that we want a high-level functioning community. You know, we have 10 principles of community life where I'm at, and we all contributed to them, and then they came out years ago distilled as, you know, the kinds of relationships we want to have on campus and the way we want to act within a community context. If she acted like that and identified with a specific university, well, that puts a different light on it.
And let me simply say that you make the Kansas State community sound like a really, really good place to be. I just want to say that right off the top. Because if these are the kind of conversations that are had, and that there's this kind of dedication to egalitarianism and equality and equal treatment and you know all of those alleged foundational principles of the republic, then we need more and not less of that.
Each place has its own history. You know, I've been here long enough to see some house cleaning going on. And when it went on a high level, we really had a change in our environment. That's what I can say. So.
Well, it's encouraging to hear that those kind of discussions do take place.
Oh, they take place a lot, and so there was a protest from members of the Black Student Union on campus, and. Okay, so we get an email newsletter every day from the media department, and it announces who's publishing and where the events are on campus and on, you know, what we need to know, new hires, but a special edition of an email newsletter came out last week, and it only had two items. One was, and I'm going to say this because it's in the public domain. You know, I'm not looking over any confidential memos and talking about them on the air. This was a newsletter item that went out to the whole K-State community and pretty darn sure alums, too. So the first item was a message from the provost and the president who were putting in print, yet again, the 10 principles of civil community life and how we were all expected to treat the protests by the members of the Black Student Union with the respect they deserved. You know, that was the message. Under that is a message from, under that item, you click on the message from the president of the Black Student Union. So what I just told you was the good news, Bob. The dark side I'm about to mention is something I really am not that aware of. But the president of the student union is putting out to the community that the protest had spawned a lot of racist messages on some media site, social media site called Yik Yak. I don't even know what it is.
I'm not familiar with either.
The kids have what they have. I'm looking at what he's saying, and he's not providing any examples, thank God, but he is saying that the discourse went to a really low level, and it was, you know, it was racist language and accusations. And so I saw that as, well, here's the high, here's our aspirations, and here's what some in our community are going through and in reality. Now, the one thing I wish I could have talked with that president of the union before he sent that letter out, because the one thing, I mean, I love that he wrote the letter. I love that he took a stand, and for his, you know, the people who protested, and I don't know if they were all African American. I would hope that all different, you know, kinds of people were involved in that protest. But he said in print that something like this, it just stood out to me, because I'm so used to talking with the press, and I'm trying to be very careful how I frame things, because there's a way to frame things where you come out of a position of powerlessness, and that's what he did. But, you know, he's a student. Someone probably didn't, you know, trot George Lakoff out in front of him. But he said something like, because we protested at the student union, it has caused some hard feelings on campus and da-da-da-da-da. You see the problem with that?
Yes.
Because, I mean, it was like, we did this. I would have just turned that thing around. The sentence structure, everything, I just would have turned it around. So that was the only thing I was wincing at that, because it certainly wasn't, they were not the problem, obviously, and it was written.
No, and the I think what I'm guessing what would prompt the remark on it would be simply to let people know that the administration knows that they're seeing that it has been pointed out. Because this is sad. I saw someone ask the other day on social media, do you think the outburst of overt racism that we've seen in the last few weeks is a byproduct, or is anybody talking about the possibility that it might be a byproduct of the election of the first black president? And, you know, my response to that, Diane, was to say, we've only been talking about this since about a week before the inauguration. Yes.
You know, I think that's why some of these cops are so nuts. They're if they're of that ilk, then they're substituting someone, you know, because all that language they project at President Obama is really bad. I mean, the things they want done to him, and how the Secret Service hasn't even protected him well enough, and some of the
and
people
the fact that there have been more death threats against the president under this president than under, like, the several previous combined?
Yeah. Do you think on some level that a cop is just substituting, how do I say this, like, is taking out his frustration with what he cannot do to President Obama and just picking on someone else in the worst way? I mean, I just wonder if it boils down to that somewhat. I think it's a real complex issue, and I wouldn't boil it down to that, but I would think there's some, you know, explanatory power to that. I don't think it's I don't think some of this activity can be set apart from the fact that we have our first half black American president. I mean, he's half white, too. I don't know why people aren't...
Well, because the birthers, deathers, tenthers...
Booger eaters, the things on their heads.
Right, exactly. Yeah, they don't see... They can't, you know, if he isn't so white they can see he's white, then he ain't white. It's the one drop rule, okay?
Well, it's, you know, it's been very illuminating to know, and not in a good way, to know we haven't got past that crap. You know, I really thought we were further along, but
I think a lot of us did, Diane. But let's back up for a moment and maybe temper what we are saying with a little bit more reality. We have seen an absolute floodgate of racism open in this country in the last 6 years. There is no getting around it.
Yeah.
But by the same token, it is not as if to say that the 8 years of Bill Clinton were eight peaceful years in which the Republicans behaved as honorable adversaries.
Yeah.
Okay, because I remember when Ann Coulter was going off screeching about how the Clintons decorated their Christmas tree with condoms.
Well, they had another target. They had another subject. Okay, we could call her Ann Coulter and that thing in our throat.
Oh!
What is that thing? Whatever. Yeah, I mean, yeah. She's weird. Yeah, you're right, but that wasn't racist, though. I mean, they were just being nuts about something else.
Well, it goes to something deeper, I think, Diane, because it speaks to the right wing desire to have it their way or no way at all, which I think ties into that KT McFarland with the clip from Fox a little bit ago, who was screeching, "Why do the people have to know this at all?" You know, about these heinous, awful, terrible, un-American, Diane, acts of torture.
Oh,
I mean, if that right-wing woman doesn't understand why the American people, who are supposed to be sovereign unto themselves and self-governing, need to know what's being done in their name, how do you even begin to explain that to a human being like that?
I'm not sure one can. Because if they don't have access to a higher level of moral reasoning to reference, I don't know what can pull them up, you know? I've been thinking today of a thought experiment. I know you're into those.
Oh, I love those.
Yeah, and here's my thought experiment about not so much the torture, although I do see that the torture related to killing citizens on the street just like you do. You can do it overseas, you can do it here. I mean, it's not vice versa. Yeah, it's not independent. They're not mutually exclusive. But I was thinking all this horrifying stuff with Ferguson and in New York. And so what comes out of the grand jury and all that, I would like to have those decision makers in the same room I'm at and I'm in, and I would like to ask them something. And I'm talking about the prosecutors, the people in the jury, and anyone else who is speaking out on this and making apologies for the behavior. I would like a thought experiment. I would like to ask them, well, you have explained conditions under which you've been dealing with conditions that you interpret as not calling for a true bill. Okay. Can you imagine any conditions at all that would seem to require a true bill? I would paint one for them. I would say the cops round out up someone, put them against the wall, stand back, and machine gun them down. Now, would that be explainable? You see where I'm at? Like, where's the boundary?
Right, right. And but Diane, to go back to a topic that I have flogged rather extensively.
Oh, the torture.
No. With regard to grand juries, we must understand that any time you turn on, say, Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, and you see somebody opining about a grand jury, they are opining because they have an opinion, and they are, in most cases, like, for instance, Sean Hannity, who, by the way, there's a clip out there over at Media Matters that's worth, I mean, it takes about 6 minutes. We're not going to run it here, but it's worth, in which he screams repeatedly at Tavis Smiley, you need to be educated, you need to be educated, you need to be educated. Bearing in mind, of course, that Sean Hannity, I think he graduated high school, and that's not saying that education is always the demarcation of the schooling is always the demarcation of education, but it showed just an absolute stunning degree of, you know, white privilege on parade. But anytime you see most times when you see someone opining, especially about the grand jury process in regard to Eric Garner or Michael Brown, you are listening, odds are, strong odds, to someone who absolutely knows next to nothing about the process whatsoever.
Oh, yeah, and I would like to take the process out of this. I actually meant to do, but I mean, the process is there, and so we get a glimpse of some scripts, some reasoning, some decision-making, some perception that is in that rig system is biased towards what the prosecutor presents, blah, 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 blah. Okay, now I'd just like to take the whole grand jury scenario and put it to the side, the rules, the history, and just take those people who are tending to reason that there are situations that call for a cop to do a chokehold, and it's explainable, and it's allowable under some conditions.
And you would like to simply have those conditions delineated?
I would like to know, well, where's the line crossed? Where is, if these conditions don't add up to some concern for looking into it further and you know, and then bringing it back maybe to the legal system, you know, going on trial. Or let's just leave the trial out of it. If these situations don't add up to anything you would find morally uncomfortable, I'll just leave it there, then where would that line be? Probably go to the Milgram experiments, and about 60% of them would say, well, just, you know, they can do anything. As long as they're wearing a uniform, they can do anything. But the thing that disturbs me about the whole torture situation is it seems like we already know the limit to that. Anything goes. Anything apparently goes with the torture. So we already crossed some kind of line of ambiguity where we would say, well, maybe
right.
But I
think there's a subtext to what you just said, that anything goes in regard to torture. Anything goes in regard to torture if torturing is your end and not a means to an end. We tortured because we, I mean, you can look at all the rationalizations, what have you, Diane. We tortured because we wanted to torture. I mean, because if you start torturing the guy before you even ask him his name,
yeah,
you're torturing because you want to torture.
See, that goes back to my wondering if the police who are shooting someone down on the street aren't substituting President Obama for that person in the same way as a lot of those people were substituting the World Trade Towers going down for the person they have in front of them and confusing cause effect, either willingly, intentionally, or
where basic training of young recruits was concerned in the immediate aftermath of the 11th of September 2001, anybody that they saw of dark skin and Muslim or Arabic, which are not the same thing, background, were referred to as Haji and towel head and camel jockey. You're daggum right. Oh, by the way, Carol says Diane just made my head explode.
Oh, Carol.
I'm
saying stuff that's been said before. I think it's just that it's still difficult for me to believe that one could substitute anger towards one thing and substitute it for anger toward another thing, a whole separate person. I don't understand the mind that does that, but apparently, the people scripting the signals in the society must understand it real well, if you know what I mean. I mean, they're pressing buttons right and left, and I'm not talking about conspiracy theory, but it seems like you know, something, the lid's been taken off of something, and the dogs from hell are just running around towards their pleasure.
Or, indeed. Indeed.
Or hate, or whatever. But,
well, and I don't think it can be discounted, because, you know, the minute, because, you know, everything's a movie reference for me. The minute you brought up the issue of this sort of substitution, hatred-based substitution, I immediately, you know, I immediately flashed on, Angela Lansbury, the Manchurian Candidate.
Murder, She Wrote. Oh, Manchur. Oh, God, that, oh, wow.
See?
That was a disturbing movie.
Yeah, what was that, the Jack of Hearts or whatever? I mean,
Frank Sinatra, yeah. I can see why you did that, Bob. I can see why your mind went there. Just programmed. Well,
yeah, and look, let's deal with reality. We've got 20 plus years now of the right wing being programmed. I mean, and isn't that argument that they were programmed? Isn't that inherent in the knee-jerk defense of somebody like Bill O'Reilly when Adkisson went crazy and bad phrase, when Adkisson went into the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist congregation and started shooting up children and adults at a performance of Annie, okay? And he left a diatribe, a manifesto, in which he said that he was motivated to do it by Bill O'Reilly, and Bill O'Reilly says, well, I didn't do that. How could I possibly do that? I mean, well, he was crazy, right?
No responsibility for having a megaphone.
Right, but he is inherently admitting the possibility or the power of his program to program. You see what I'm saying?
To program.
And we have
far
too many examples of that going on.
And we might as well shut down the university if it's going to infect us, I'm telling you. But so far, I think we're more on the side of critical thinking than not, but there's certain inroads made, as you know. And I think when you were talking about the brothers, they tend to go for economics departments. They might go into school of businesses, though. I don't really know, but I know they go into economic departments a lot. Maybe they can't do a lot of damage there because, you know, students don't understand economics very well. So, it all might get lost in abstraction there.
Diane, it's been lovely talking with you. I'm going
to create
a little space for one more call.
Yes.
I do, when I get to ship it to you, I do sincerely hope that you enjoy the wild rice. I think you will. I think it'll be.
I will, and I'll enjoy where it came from and the thought that went into it. Okay, Bob. Well, thanks for conjuring me.
Oh, thank you for answering the conjure.
Yeah. Okay. Later then.
Bye now, Diane.
Bye.
Bye. The marvelously coherent Diane from Kansas Stan. The 7 minutes left to go in the program. We are $150 down. I'd love it if a couple of people wanted to pick up that wild rice premium, because it's not gonna. There's not a whole bunch of it, and you know, a week from now, hey Bob, no, sorry. And staying out of the hole is a really, really, really big deal, considering the bills that we have coming due. You know, middle of the month, end of this week. It's grave. I'm not kidding. We're always hanging by the last dry rotted thread of a 10-year-old sneaker shoestring, but it is, and we're $150 down. Let's go to the other line. Hey, Larry.
Hi, Bob. How are you? Thanks a lot for taking my call.
Thank you for making it.
I just wanted to say, you know, would love to get into a discussion with Diane about what gets taught in a business ethics course, and whether or not she talks about the ethics of various economic and social systems, like capitalism as opposed to socialism, or socialism, you know, and how business organizations would operate under all these various kinds of configurations, social configurations. Anyway, I think as far as what Diane was saying, she'd like to do this thought experiment. I think that she's giving, you know, maybe you can critique what I'm saying, but I think she's giving these people a lot of more credit than they really deserve. Look, they tortured people, and there's no excuse for it.
Wait, Larry, there's an excuse for it. The excuse, and it's, I mean, it extends past excuse. They wanted to torture, therefore they tortured, because they considered themselves to be above and beyond any conception of law. Law for them is a nuisance. Law for them is something to be gotten around. Law for them is an intellectual game that they play to get away with what they want to get away with. It does not stand as a bar to them. It stands as a challenge.
Yeah, I think I made my, I think that we made our point that no amount of consideration of these people through any kind of, you know, trying to be fair by, asking them to trying to find out if there is something to them that would not be constituted as torture, I don't think that they would be able to answer Diane. I don't think they'd want to answer Diane. I think that they would be. Anyway, I know where I'm going, but everyone else listening, and you may not know where I'm going. At any rate, I think there are no helicopters yet. There were helicopters here from Friday onward, and they drove me crazy. And yes, they were here for the protests and all that, but there were only a very few people who broke away from, you know, peaceful protests. And to have these helicopters and have this large police presence where...
Well, I have to wonder, Larry, were they all law enforcement helicopters, or were some of those the helicopters of Action News Team Coverage Channel 9 Fox, or, you know, whatever?
Well, maybe. You know, all I know is they were loud and upsetting, and I don't like living in a police state.
Welcome to 2014, Larry.
I know. And I'm, trying to understand queer theory and Native American studies, and I think I finally got it. And I think that what basically is saying is that when the English and the borderers came over here, they imposed their way of life and their culture on Native Americans, and Native American cultures largely... their sexuality was very fluid, and they didn't have, very large gender binaries between male and female. And then when the Europeans came over here and forced their cultural paradigm or their binaries on Native Americans, it caused a lot of problems because not only did they force a sexuality or sexual segregation or separation on people, but they also forced labor conditions and various practices designed to mess up the socially constructed norm of Native Americans, Native Americans were. I think I'm trying to make sense, but
and you are. Unfortunately, I don't have any more time. We're fresh out. I got to get out of here, Larry.
Okay.
You have yourself a good evening.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Bye now. My buddy Larry calling from Berkeley. It's time to get out of here. We will begin the program tomorrow in a $300 hole. So any help is much appreciated. Thank you very kindly. Thanks to our all volunteer staff. Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy, moderators in the chat room, thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan and Carol Baker. Thank you. Thank you, John Fox, for all of your technical assistance. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT, ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.